Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Hey guys, welcome back to Reality TV. Wow, what a weekend in 90 Day Fiancé news. Yeah, I'm talking about Paul and Karini. Turns out Paul has changed none whatsoever. So we'll get into that when I start recapping 90 Day Fiancé a little bit later on. But just so you know, this week on this episode, I'll be recapping Love After Lockup, 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After, and of course, Married at First Sight. Over on Patreon this week, Amanda and I are due for our crossover. We'll be catching up with episode 4 of Marriage Family Bootcamp. That means 90 Day Fiancé the other way. I won't be able to get to this week, but I'm going to be live tweeting. So if you are listening to this ad-free and early, meet up with me tonight, Monday night, and we'll just have at it on Twitter. Now, over on Total Request Podcast, we are going to be recapping one of my favorite shows. This was, of course, a request from one of our listeners. If you sign up, you can request the show that you want us to watch. We're going to be recapping Manor House. It's a PBS series where they go back and they live in the time of, in this case, think Downton Abbey. They have people who are committed to living as the servants or the aristocracy, you know, upstairs versus downstairs. I watched it when it first aired, and I'm so excited that we got that request. If you are interested in even more recaps, Amanda and I have a $6 level where you get all the main shows plus an extra 4 shows a month. And these are series or movies or TV shows, documentaries that we want each other to watch. I assigned Amanda to watch season 1 of Making a Murderer. She's never seen it. So we'll be breaking that down this week. And speaking of breaking down, last week we broke down seasons 1 and 2 of Breaking Bad. Amanda's definitely the expert. I'm the newbie. I had a lot of questions, but surprisingly, I'm into it. I know, you're like, Jody's such a huge meth head. We assume that she would have watched the whole series. But no, I'm new to it, and it's pretty damn good, even though the whisper talking, that's one of my pet peeves with shows, you know, when they get really dramatic and they talk like this. But I'm loving it. So that is at patreon.com/trpod. And speaking of Patreon, very quick, heartfelt thanks to Mara, Sasha, Ashley, and Deb. Everyone should be thanking you because you are keeping this show here free and alive on iTunes or wherever you are listening. Now, without any further ado, let's talk about Married at First Sight, because this episode was probably one of the best episodes in all of Married at First Sight history, because Amelia and Bennett tied the knot in one of the weirdest, kookiest, disturbing ceremonies and receptions I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of vintage episodes of The Wedding Story. To me, the craziest part about the whole thing is that the crazy Finch on Amelia's head, somehow it gets lost in layers upon layers of macrame and Persian rugs that are overlapping everywhere you walk. I mean, there's so many textiles and yarns and random nods to several different eras, actually. You know, nothing stands out at all because there are so many things to look at. Now, let's just get to the moment where two of the three lovebirds in the room meet at the, I'm going to trademark this, the macramalter. Yeah, there's a lot of macrame going on, and I enjoy a little macrame, but this was a lot. So Amelia immediately notices that she knows Bennett. She's met him before. She knows she met him at this specific party. Bennett knows he knows her from somewhere, but it's not until he hears the officiant say, "This is Amelia," that it all snaps together for him. Now, Bennett's vows, I expected to be very wordy. You know, he fancies himself a romantic thespian, so I thought we were really going to go on a journey here. But his vows were pretty damn sweet. I loved the part about learning what her favorite song is because it's very specific. And I think we all have been there, you know, if you've been in love. It was just perfect. Amelia's poem, however, was, well, I don't know if whether you would call it a poem. I mean, I'm not a poet myself, but the rhythm and the cadence seemed a little lacking to me. You know, give me some simple rhymes or an acrostic if you must, but don't make me sit here now days, almost a week later, and be repeating vanilla and fella to myself over and over, trying to find the rhyme that Amelia was attempting. So anyway, yay, they're married, they share a kiss, and they make their way to the rooftop to chat. And that's where we learn this mutual friend named Mary has gotten them together at least twice. Weird that we don't actually meet Mary because she wasn't invited to the wedding, but turns out this timing was off for Bennett the first time they met because he was in a relationship. They met at some event that he was having for his band, and then they met a separate time at a party where Bennett taught Amelia about credit cards, and that, like, flooded her basement. She couldn't get over this. I still think they might have hooked up at that party. I think credit cards is a little lingo for, like, you know, he slid through her credit card reader, if you know what I'm saying. But yeah. Obviously, they click. They seem to have a lot in common. But let's talk about the real snarky shit that we need to get to. And I'm going to start with this little crossover that they do where Benny gets to talk to her friends and family and vice versa. So the Lampshade sisters ask Bennett which national park he identifies with. And that immediately made me want to punch him in the face or take their scarves off and, I don't know, choke him out or something. Because really, we get it. You guys are so kooky. You're so nonconformist. You're going to ask these crazy questions. National park. Stupid. Okay? Hated the fucking question. It's not your day. Can you just pipe down and ask a normal question? But then they take it a step further. And they start asking Bennett about his hygiene habits. Like how often he showers. They deserved the answer that Bennett gave them about his reoccurrent jock itch because the reason these bitches asked that question was because they wanted to call out their friend, very good friend that they stood up to her wedding. They wanted to call her out for having long armpit hair. What kind of friends are they? I think it's disgusting, but if it were my friend, I'm not going to call her out on it in front of her new husband and a crew of cameras that are going to spread this all over the world. Now, of course, Bennett doesn't care because he's Bennett. He actually thinks it's sexy that Amelia has, you know, she's like Rapunzel. She can just let down her armpit hair and be all powerful and liberated. I just hope Bennett isn't standing downwind from Amelia on a hot day because he will smell how strong liberation can be. Let's see what else. Oh, crazy. Bennett's best man is Stephen Merchant. Who knew? Now, the egg on a stick tradition, we need to discuss this because I know families have some wacky things they like to do, or maybe a tradition is exchanging pajamas on Christmas Eve. You know, that's a tradition. I have never seen anyone come up with something like, let's tie an egg on a stick and dangle it in someone's face till they catch it with their mouth. What the hell is going on? And then it gets even weirder because once Bennett catches it in its mouth, which was kind of a gift. I mean, Amelia just kept dangling it there until she pretty much just placed it in his mouth. But he catches it, then tries to crush it and eat it. And Amelia says, I can't believe he ate it. No one's ever actually eaten it. Who eats a raw egg? That's just weird. Oh, that's weird that he ate the egg that you shoved in his mouth, basically, that you hovered over until he had no choice but to put it in his mouth. That's the weird part. Nothing about finding an egg, tying a string around it carefully, and having a room full of people watch this happen. God, these two. I mean, they really must be made for each other. Now, then we get this weird improv shtick that Bennett, Stephen Merchant, and the meth head Eminem groomsmen, they start doing something with Amelia's vagina being a freezer and ice cream. They need to workshop their improv skills immediately. Now, let's fast forward to the hotel room. No surprise to anyone, Amelia and Bennett are both wearing dirty, faded, gross. Like, I can smell the mildew. And I'm really hoping, this is really hard for me even just to discuss. Bennett mentioned that he forgot his toothbrush and he's going to use Amelia's first and then she's going to use it. Or was that part of the improv, that hilarious improv routine that they were doing? I don't even want to talk about it because I will actually vomit. Okay, let's talk about Henry and Christina. Oh my gosh, I have so much to say. Oh, actually, hold on. Forget these two for just a moment. Let's talk about Henry III. This is Henry's dad. This guy needs his own show. Like a Cajun or New Orleans cabbie who roasts his riders in the backseat. Think like a cash cab, but he doesn't reward them for anything. He just like rips on them endlessly. He looks exactly like Bobby Moynihan's drunk uncle on Saturday Night Live, except he's even more mean. Even on his own son's wedding day, he cannot resist. He can't help himself. He is ripping into Henry, cracking jokes at Henry's expense any chance he can get. He's calling him pretty just because he irons his shirts. It's so horrible, but it's priceless to watch. And his mom was pretty funny, too. I didn't catch her name because, again, Henry III really steals the show. What she was looking forward to most was going to sleep afterwards. She needs a good night's rest, like she needs a kick in the pants, if you know what I mean. Which leads me to Henry's personality. It's no wonder to me now why Henry seems so reserved and quiet. He's learned early on, you know, you've got to just sit there, say nothing, just fly under the radar. It'll get you through dinner faster with less pain, with less jabs right to your freaking heart. Because you know he's had a lifetime of prime harassment. But let's talk about Christina, because I'm going to tell you right now, I already have a lot of things to say and very strong opinions about her. Let's start superficially, all right? I was surprised that I loved her dress because it's really not my style, but she looked beautiful in it. I would have liked to see Christina smile a bit more because she seems a little rough around the edges. Or no, not rough around the edges, high-strung. Okay, she's very prideful. And this was before she was getting all bitchy with her mom and the producers right before she walked in. And I get it. You're full of nerves on your wedding day, especially if you don't know who your groom is going to be. But she's on a TV show. She knows this. And yet she's still acting like a brat. Now, the bridesmaid's dresses, I get what she was going for, but there was just way too much embellishment. And a lot of the attention that I think Christina wanted on herself went towards the beating going on. So pair a lot of look bridesmaid dress with the ginormous bouquets. It was 2-2. Now, once Christina walks in and her veil got stuck in that door, I thought she was going to rip her mom's face off. I knew Christina was going to be pissed. And I'm sure she gave it to her mom when they were like in a bathroom later, because she is not the type of gal who's going to let that go. Then I started cringing because once Christina got down the aisle, she looked visibly disappointed. And the longer she stood up there not looking at Henry and the slower that officiant trudged her way through the vows, dear God, pick up the pace, woman, the worse it got for at least all of us watching. You could tell Henry knew there was some nervousness, some awkwardness, some tension, but I don't think Christina really sensed it. Christina was staring off into nowhere, seemingly thinking about herself. I'm going to make a prediction here. I think we find out Christina is kind of a huge narcissist. I'm getting the, I'm perfect, I'm so pretty, I'm super special vibe. Think Iris. Remember her? It was kind of Iris's world and everyone else is living in it. I think Iris was a little bit more upbeat and peppy. So think a little bit less optimistic, less bubbly Iris. And that's where we are with Christina. So Henry's up there. I think he might have like a little Tourette's or something because he was nervous. He's twitching or ticking. And that made me love him even more. You know, I just wanted to hug him and then yell at his dad for ripping into him and then falling asleep during the vows, which, I mean, we can acknowledge how weird the vows were. Henry, I like him, obviously more than I like Christina, but really you're bringing up Taylor Swift during your vows. And then Christina making a whole big show about how she loves Taylor Swift. Because Christina is that kind of a girl. Of course, she's going to love Taylor Swift, and that's fine. But can you honestly say you would want your future husband to bring up Taylor Swift in your wedding vows? It made me picture Christina at some concert, like taking a selfie with Taylor in the background, but truly just a selfie, like not with her friends or Henry, just her. Because I love her. Taylor's my girl. No, Henry, not you. Can you just move? Just me and Taylor. Are you catching what I'm throwing down here? And think about this. Christina was just at the altar with her new groom. She's been dying to know who this guy is, dying to know what his name is, but yet she thinks it's all cute and funny that she doesn't remember what his name is. No, like really, what's his name? I told you, she was up there thinking about herself the entire time. Wouldn't you be saying his name over and over again in your head that entire ceremony? That's what would be going on through my head. Jody and so-and-so, right? It's just bizarre to me. And then, oh, this was like the hugest red flag up until this point. Henry is pointing out his friends. Ooh, we're going to talk about in a minute. He's pointing out who his friends are at the other table. And she goes, oh my God, I forgot to put my earrings on. Oh my God, my earrings. I have these amazing earrings. Totally ignoring everything that he was just saying. Just cut him off. Like she's on a whole other planet where Henry was never speaking. And then her mom comes over and she's like, Mom, my earrings, I need your earrings, and puts her earrings on. Sure, that thought would cross my mind if I forgot to put my earrings on and maybe I would exclaim something like, oh my God, I just forgot my earrings. But then I would apologize for interrupting and be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. What were you just saying? Or maybe it's just that Christina isn't worried about impressing Henry at all because she thinks she is a real prize. Like, he is so lucky to have gotten her. I'm telling you guys, I don't like her at all. And it's going to get worse. So hang in there. Now, we have some pretty bad wedding speeches. You know, drunk Uncle Dad needs to give up. It was just starting to get mean. It wasn't even roasting. It was just mean. Now, then Christina is sitting there and she's doing something, again, not really paying attention to Henry or anything his family is saying. She's just fixing her hair and her bangs. This is when we hear him say, like, hey, Trishelle, or this is Trishelle. And my mind was like, whoa, it was that little gif, you know, where worlds are colliding. Henry is friends with MTV Trishelle. Yeah, you know, the one who was on The Real World and all these different challenge spinoffs, the crazy drunk one. Not much has changed. It blows my mind because I can't imagine Henry being friends with the type of girl that I know Trishelle to be, purely from what we see on TV. But even then, Christina tries to blow her off. And I think it's because she didn't really realize who Trishelle was. But then once she realized, oh, she's from MTV, of course she's going to be buddy-buddy with her. Now, like I said, Trishelle's obviously been drunk since 2005. Nothing has changed. But somehow, the brunette friend who blew Brett off that I thought I was going to, like, she comes in and she's even more messy than Trishelle. Like, those chicks needed to be cut off from the open bar, the Chardonnay fountain, because they were trashed, sloppy, gross. Now, Henry must have known that it was a mistake to even invite them because Trishelle comes back around and she's getting all buddy-buddy with Christina because, you know, now they're friends. They're the two drunk girls in the bar that are now besties. And he tells Trishelle to back off. And Christina then is like, oh my God, like, why is he doing this? Trishelle, can you believe Henry Elmer here? I hated it. I don't like her. And why is she wearing the cathedral length veil all night? I love a long veil. Don't get me wrong. I had one myself, but you don't wear that all fucking night, even back to the hotel room. Like, you couldn't just take it off on the way up. It's a bit much. We get it. You're the bride. You can take it off now. I mean, she really does think she's amazing. I know I have the same level of dislike for her as I have for John Frasenic, now Brett, Zach last season. This chick is requiring a whole lot of attention, and I don't have time for any of it unless it's to snark on her. Now we get to check back in with our other couples who tied the knot last week. First being Karen and Miles. They're kind of boring, to be honest. Karen's got some reservations about Miles because, remember, he's not her type, but now she's kind of digging him a little bit. She let him rub her feet, which, ew. I've been married for 15 years and I'm not rubbing Dave's feet. Sorry, not sorry. It's not happening. So they have to be hitting it off on some level for that to take place. Now, Brett and Olivia. Olivia's like the opposite of Christina. So sweet. She's adorable. Like I said last week, and I'll say every week, she should have been matched with Henry. Brett, on the other hand, looks worse than ever. His skin is all rashy and raised. His teeth are stained. There's like white and yellow patches. Listen, Crest White strips are not that expensive. Target has an Up and Up brand that you can always get 5% off with your red card. Just get yourself some. Now, Brett is also oblivious to the camera in his face because he was shoving an entire whole biscuit down his gullet, like a fist-sized butter biscuit, just went right down, and then he swigs back his beer in a can in this weird, fast arm motion. Something's up with this douche, I'm telling you. Now, Olivia's friends, I think they're on to Brett. The way the three of them just stood staring at him when his joke about his dry contacts bombed, priceless. Those chicks know what's up. Now, on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the Brett brothers, who are so delusional. They had the balls, the audacity to say to Olivia's face that the three of them were worried that they would have dated Olivia before Brett married her. Just take that in for a moment, okay? What's baffling to me is that Olivia seems way more into Brett than he is into her. She's got to be cringing watching this now, seeing that she gave him so much leeway and attention. I'm assuming that they're not together anymore because, Brett. And looks aside, I'm not even talking about how Brett looks, although his face is just annoying to me. His aura, just the way he carries himself and this arrogance and this ego, I don't get it at all. Now let's leave on a good note here and talk about Woody and Amani. I was skeptical, but I am feeling this one. I have a really good feeling about these two. There's nothing to snark on because Amani looked gorgeous. Besides the necklace, it was a little bit much, but I talked about that last week. The reception was fun. Everyone's getting along. Woody and Amani's dad and stepdad are all talking to each other how they're a team. You know, they're all family now. And oh my damn, Amani's dads have the best smiles, especially that guy in the middle. And Woody does too. Strangely enough, his friend or his roommate brings up the fact that Woody is always brushing his teeth. He always uses white strips. And you know me, I am cursed with an orthodontist eye. And I was just hoping Woody would, you know, share the love, share some expertise with his buddies, Brett, and I hate to say it, Henry. They could both use some white strips as well. Okay, so love this couple. I'm excited to see what happens with these two. And next week, all the couples go on their honeymoon, which is always one of the best episodes. So make sure you're tuning into that. And now let's talk about our couples on Love After Lockup.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Thank you.
Well, we have a new couple alert. Let's meet our newest contestants to Love After Lockup, Tyrese and Chanda. A self-proclaimed hot commodity from Chicago, Tyrese considers himself a romantic and a deep thinker. That obviously makes sense because he says he wants a nice, understanding woman with a nice butt. Enter Chanda. Let's take a moment here, a little consonant blend lesson. She spells her name C-H-A-N-D-A. I think anyone looking at that would say Chanda, but Tyrese says it Chanda. He kind of puts a little lacy Jean to Chanda. Very interesting choice of pronunciation. Anyhow, Chanda and her big ol' ass, that's Tyrese's words, not mine, were scooped up by Mr. Hot Commodity when he saw her on this weird pop-up thing. It came across Tyrese's phone when he was reading, it was like the New York Times or could have been the Wall Street Journal, or maybe it was the New England Journal of Medicine. Anyhow, one thing led to another, you know, yada, yada, yada. His finger accidentally hit download. Next thing he knew, he was on a flight to visit Chanda. They've been together for 2.5 months, and Tyrese is confident she is the one. This is going to lead to marriage. Cool story, except for the fact that he has 3, I don't want to say full-grown kids. They look like teenagers or young 20s. He's got 3 kids that have no idea about this chick. So, you know, that's always just going to be a great dinner with daddy and his girlfriend who has incorrect consonant blends. Now, we also meet a friend with a spelling name issue, Tangi. Tangi spells her name like tangy, but with a soft G. I'm not going to give her any shade because I love Tangi. She's talking sense into Tyrese, although he's not listening. But I like her because I think she could really take on Chanda if Chanda is a scammer. I don't know. I have no feeling about Chanda yet. You guys let me know. We really just seen a couple photos and it's hard to figure out what she exactly looks like besides that big old butt. All right, let's talk about Chevelle and Quaylon, or I should really say Chevelle and Quaylon's mom because we haven't met him in person yet. Really, we need to be giving Chevelle and Quaylon's mom a lot of credit because they could be going at each other, fighting over Quaylon, but they aren't. They are very civil. They see one another's point of view, and although they both want to have Quaylon all to themselves, they are taking their anger and putting it towards Quaylon because they know he is the one that's lying. He led both of them on to believe that he is moving to either state that they're in, and that's real shitty. So the only thing I can say about them is what amazing, strong, calm women, because they could be clawing each other's eyes out. Think, you know, Debbie and Colt's girlfriends and wives. All right, let's talk about John and Christiana. Oh, God, you guys, I really don't even know where to start with these two. I guess let's start with, well, even before Christiana gets into the limo, the prisoners are behind this fence, and it threw me for a loop because all of the women are wearing not prison uniforms. Like, Christiana is wearing prison blues from head to toe in a too small jean jacket. I don't know what was going on with that. But all of the women still in prison are wearing normal stuff. I saw a tie-dye shirt. Everyone's wearing jeans. Actually, someone might have had a khaki skort. There's sweaters, probably some rompers, dresses, maxi dresses in there. Like, what is going on? So that's my first question. Someone give me what's going on in Iowa prisons. So we're still at the limo. John's on bended knee with his little pony prince outfit. And Christiana finally says yes, she will marry him. Now, she doesn't know about the whole wedding ceremony. She just knows someday she will marry him. So they climb into the limo. John spills grape juice all over everything because John can't do anything right in his life. And then Christiana scoots closer to John. It is only then that we see Christiana appears to be, I'm sorry, I have to say this, she looked like she was Andre the Giant size. Is Christiana really that large, or perhaps John is that tiny, or are all the roads in Iowa on a 45-degree angle? File these under things we don't have time to discuss, but we need to know because we have 8 minutes to be married, everyone. 8 minutes. Or is that 7 minutes? I felt stress watching this. I think it's safe to say surprise weddings are always a surprise and never a welcome one. I felt so badly for Christiana where we leave her there. She's in the middle of the woods with a woman she's never met. She's stripping off her clothes, putting on whatever white strapless dress I can. Jesus, I don't even want to imagine what John would pick out, but that looks like it doesn't fit. So she's putting on maybe a clean pair of underwear and John's dirty leather coat, a shaman blowing smoke in her face. It's wafting all over. And she's got John screaming, 6 minutes. What the hell, man? You know, and if she doesn't want to do this, it's going to make her look like the asshole. She's going to be the bad guy because it's going to come across like she doesn't appreciate this surprise marriage ceremony. And at the very least, it's going to make for a weird awkwardness between them. It was just a terrible idea on John's part, and all because of selfish reasons, let's be honest. Speaking of selfish, I don't even think we've seen the half of it. Lindsay and Scott. Scott is pulling out all the stops. No skimping here, you guys. He is ordering steak to go. Yeah, you heard me right. He just can walk into a place, order off a menu. They put it in a brown bag for him, just for him. What a lucky lady Lindsay is going to be. You know, I bet she will get those pancakes. She's going to get her champagne, her bubble bath. She is going to shop till she drops. Oh, and of course, you know, maybe see her daughter. But I mean, come on, pancakes before your preteen. Am I right? She is going to be a disaster, you guys. Lindsay is such a monster. I can't even imagine what we are in for. Now, let's talk about Scott again, because for such a money man, he's throwing it around on interior designers and the fancy designer underwear. Wasn't he the one that was like, yeah, I went to a store called Victoria's Secret. I don't know if you know about it because it's a secret. Why is he driving this piece of shit truck? You know, people who have actual money don't think they're going big by renting a stretched Hummer. They're just going to clean out their car and use the Hummer money to eat at an actual sit-down restaurant. You know, this was pre-COVID, so the lukewarm meat seems to be a theme, actually, in this entire episode. I don't get it at all. Now, then we see Scott get to the airport, and he thinks he's playing it cool, you know, waltzing around the airport like he's an air traffic controller, just checking on the flight boards, making sure they're accurate. No, you fucking idiot. Of course those boards are going to be accurate. They don't just make a guesstimate based on the position of the sun and the moon. God, just shut up and wait for your girlfriend, who I think is going to be, I hate to put this out in the universe, but I think she's going to be one of the felons on this series who likens herself to like a Casey Anthony, or I am going to liken her to it. There's a scary kind of narcissism going on there. Or think Casey Anthony meets Jodi Arias. Because there's a lot of charm, there's the good looks, but there's something creepy under the surface. All right, Maurice and Jessica, these two, who, well, they've met. They're driving to an Airbnb, also known as the Bojangles house. So if anyone is looking for an Airbnb, don't go to this one. I'm sorry for the owner, but listen, there's no way in hell anyone wants to knowingly sleep in that bed after these two had their sex all over it. Now, let's remember that these two are 26 and 33. They're not 19. The way they're running around, making it seem like they're up to no good because they're going to have sex together. We get what's going on, all right? We don't need to see you tickling each other's feet. We don't need to see Jessica's old dirty beige bra flapping off her shoulders. Just go and do your thing. But please, please, dear God, take a shower. If you missed the interstitial, be glad you did, because these two filthy birds truly are dirty. They hop on a plane to Los Angeles for Maurice's parole check-in or whatever, and they're both wearing the same clothes that they were rolling around that Airbnb in. That's disgusting. Go wash yourselves, take a shower before you go sit on those nasty plane seats. This is why planes are flaming lava balls in the sky. I'll let you use your imagination how I welcome Dave home after he comes home from traveling. All right, Sean and Destiny. Well, Sean is cooking a meal for Destiny, and I just want to die right now. I never want to think of that tube of, I don't know what that was. It was like some indistinguishable meat byproduct being squeezed and cooked on an ironing board. I need to put that out of my mind forever if I ever want to enjoy tacos again, because turns out Destiny has a real hankering for tacos. So Sean thought it would be a great idea to make some for her. No, go buy her a fucking Taco Supreme from Taco Bell, like an actual human being, you sick monster. He's just pasting corn tortillas to taco shells with God only knows what. Canned refried beans? I don't want to know. He didn't even bake the shells for a few minutes first. You gotta put those in the oven to crisp them up. They taste disgusting if you don't. You want to taste what Sean's urine and raw beef tastes like? Well, dig right in, because not only is he fingering every ingredient, he's sprinkling what looks like reduced fat cheese on top of these gorditas with his dirty ass hands. So if Destiny wants to lose weight, like she's talking about, maybe Sean's helping her out, because she's either going to choose to starve to death looking at those damn things, or she'll be shit until next Christmas because of food poisoning. There's no way that meat and his hands and the cross-contamination is going to lead to anything other than an ER visit. Okay, now, did I or did I not tell you last week Sean was an asshole? He's not worried at all about his $5,000 to $50,000 he could be out. He's just worried now how not hot Destiny could be with all that weight she says she has to lose. He's actually more concerned with her losing weight than losing his own kids. Now, even when they meet, which was super anticlimactic, by the way, he comments on how he can overlook her not being short and skinny like the girls that he's normally attracted to. Oh, really, Sean? Well, hopefully she can overlook your missing bottom tooth and your mouth that got put on crooked. Neither of them are prizes, but how about they both keep their expectations a little lower? Okay. All right, let's move on to 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
All right, so I am just going to get this out of the way, kind of talk about the elephant in the room, that being Paul and Carini. Over the weekend, Paul called the cops on Carini, saying that she was drunk all the time in front of their son, that she was cheating on him. She filed a restraining order against Paul. Of course, he retaliated by posting other personal things and screenshots of the police report that Carini had against him. She said that Paul has been kind of physically abusing her, emotionally abusing her. He was saying that Carini disappeared. He has no way of getting a hold of her. The police don't know where she's at. And Carini posted a response. She says, "I want you all to know me and Pierre are doing well. All these past days, I had a lot going on. As the media showed, I had issues where the police were called because I feared for my life and my son's life, which led me to ask for help and ultimately be rescued from an environment that no longer was healthy for any of us involved in the situation. I'm getting the best help I could ever get, and I'm really thankful for all the people involved in it. I also thank all the people that worry about me and the support that I have. It's been a big part of my recovery. Relationships are hard, and sometimes they just can't be fixed anymore. I need this time to organize my thoughts, work on myself, and care for my son after everything we have been through in the last year and a half. Just to clarify, the EPO, Emergency Protective Order, was me. I had help from a translator since I do not speak English. I would also like to state that I am not missing. The police know where to find me if they need me. This is a legal matter, not a media matter. That being said, it's the first and last time I'll speak about it. Thank you all again, Carini." So I think we need to respect that, and I'm going to move right along and talk about Colt, Jessica, and Debbie. I'm not going to talk about Larissa because I can't stand her. This whole Eric thing and her and whatever fake relationship they had, it's all bullshit and it's a whole level of thirsty I'm not going to take part in. I will talk about Debbie accepting gifts. Without shame, though, after acting like a rude bitch the day before to Jess's family, she's hugging his dad, smiling to his face, then talking behind his back saying he's really weird. But here she is accepting all their gifts. You know, shouldn't Debbie be the one furnishing gifts to her very gracious hosts? Or maybe she considers them to be so fortunate to listen to her bitch and moan about their beans and their daughter for hours. Ugh. And then to think about Debbie's feet and flip-flops, now we got to think about that, made my stomach flip and flop. Because you know there's some nasty ingrown nail bunion situation going on. She probably got Colt rubbing them down for her every night, which is probably why she's so pissed about Colt possibly marrying Jess. She's not going to have her little nightly rub downs. Oh God, that sounded wrong. Foot rub is what I was going for. Let's just take a quick left turn and talk about this proposal here. Colt slips away, asks Jess's dad for her hand in marriage, and he agrees. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I don't know whether he did or didn't. I know they're not together anymore, but I don't think he ever intended at any point to ask Jess to marry him. And if he did, if he ever was going to, he would have called it off as soon as cameras left or the next weird chick hit up his Instagram. It was never a sincere ask. You can just tell by the look on his face. It's fake. It's that stupid, smug, ignorant smile that he doesn't know that we see. Does that make any sense? All right. Well, while he's fake asking, Debbie is all eagle eyes on Colt because she knows as soon as she gets back into that van with Jess and Colt, she's going to really fuck up this girl's life. And sure enough, in true Debbie fashion, she says in front of Jess, Colt, what were you asking Jess's dad about? I thought maybe it was going to be about a possible proposal. Fuck you, Debbie. You absolutely suck. And Colt sucks too. How about that cover story of his? We were just talking about guy stuff. You know, football. Sure, Colt, football. Of all the things Colt's going to come up with, of course he's going to come up with football. Did he mean soccer or football Americano? Either one, he's full of shit because does it look like Colt frequents a football field, a soccer field, any field at all? Does he even like to walk past a park? No. Now, where did Colt learn his ability to lie on the spot? From DaBella DaBall herself, Debbie. This bitch calls up Vanessa and she's asking about her cats. They're talking on FaceTime. And of course, oopsies, that slips out of her mouth when Jess and Colt come over. This is after Jess graciously invites Debbie to go out on the town and see Brazil before they go home. Debbie's got to just be a bitch and hurt Jess just to hurt her. It's not even pointed at Colt. She could be pissed off at Colt that Colt's bringing girls left and right, but she's going to take it out on anyone else because she has this weird, incestual love for Colt. Would it be so much to ask to get Debbie, Colt? Oh, you know what? I'll even throw in their microwave and some steaks, isolate by themselves, and just get them off our show, and throw River and Karen, Chantel's mother and brother, get them off our pillow talk, for Christ's sake. Maybe on that island, we could put family Chantel. Oh, Chantel too. Maybe even Pedro, because he drives me nuts. Also, the family Debbie, and throw Tanya in there too. Okay, let's move on to Elizabeth and Andre. These two are so exhausting. I would rather, well, I was going to say eat or try that gelatinous jello pork dish. I wouldn't eat it, but I would rather watch it melt up to room temperature than listen to these two go at it again. They just got to move on from this argument. Elizabeth especially, again, I hate Andre. I think he's a piece of shit. But if Elizabeth thinks he is that unbearable, then all she has to do is stop stoking the flames. Chuck and Charlie, oh, these two. Well, first, I should say that they're doing a real disservice to the name Charles because my son is a Charlie. So of course I take this personally. But secondly, they're not doing themselves any good trying to make it seem like, America is where everyone wants to go, because who in their right mind sitting at that table, or even anyone watching this on TV that doesn't live in the United States, who wants to go to a country where these assholes live? You know, they were looking for a fight and they finally got it. Andre is an asshole, but what they pulled at that dinner was ridiculous. Imagine going to a dinner for your sister and your brother-in-law and all of his family and his friends. Would you be sitting there and grilling your in-law about their past? Absolutely not. And at this point, Andre is not going anywhere. They're getting married for a second time. If you really wanted him to get out of the picture, to be out of your family, then take it up with your sister or your daughter. Take it up with Elizabeth. She has been playing both sides this entire time. I don't care whether it's fake and phony because they want to get some stupid family Elizabeth spinoff. Dear God, please don't let it happen. It's so over. It's so overdone. Let's move on and get rid of them. Now, Kalani and Asuelu, I could take some more of them because I think Kalani can do better. Yeah, I've seen the light. I am moving past my Asuelu love. Now, the Samoan store, I need to go to there purely for window shopping, though, because the markup on those imports was yikes, but I could have a field day in there. Now, let's talk about Kalani. You know, she's more patient than probably anyone we've seen on this show, more patient than any patron saint I've learned about in my first 15 years of life that I've now forgotten. You know, no one has handled themselves better when told in very, very few words that their mother-in-law is more important than them, their wife. Asuelu has got to get his shit straight. He has been living and working here for at least a year now. He knows what things cost. He knows what he is and is not paid at work. Get it together, man, and be a grown-up. Be part of the team. And when I say the team, I mean your wife and your kids. You know, if you're not with them, you are against them at this point, period. Damn it, Kalani. You guys, when this pandemic is over, we'll fly ourselves to Utah. I know where it is, by the way. It's in the Southwest. I still think someone moved it. But we are going to go there. We're going to get a whole bunch of boxes of wine and vodka. We're going to tear it up. Kalani can come too. Chips, salsa, kick-ass charcuterie. You know, maybe Lo makes an appearance. Nobody's going to complain about that, right? This girl just deserves so much more respect and love than what she's getting from Asuelu. Now, oh my God, I didn't even talk about their trip. Jesus. All right, I got really excited there with the box wine and the vodka. Let's get to this Washington trip. First of all, TLC made it look like they were going on The Amazing Race. You know, like it was a 14-hour flight and are they going to make it? Whatever. The thing is, the babies probably do think it's a 14-hour flight. They don't know any different. These kids are done. So they get in the car, the kids are crying, they're tired, they're crabby. But you know what? Asuelu isn't even flinching. And it's not because he doesn't love them. It's because he knows Kalani will be the one walking around in a dark room at whoever's house is hosting them. She's going to be back there pacing while she's trying to rock one or two babies to sleep. He'll be able to go out there, sit on his ass, mingle with his family, eat good food, while she's stuck with two crying babies who just want to lay the hell down in a quiet space and go the fuck to sleep. Asuelu is a baby, so he's thinking like his sons. I want what I want when I want it. You know, he puts himself before anyone and everyone because he has no empathy. It doesn't even occur to him that Kalani could be put out or inconvenienced because he's all about himself. I don't think he's going to be able to change that anytime soon or ever unless he gets some real serious therapy. And something tells me Asuelu isn't the type of man that would be open to that. All right, Angela and Michael. Dear God, I don't know how the hell we're still talking about this. How many years have we known Angela is well past baby-making age? We've got to move past this whole toting a baby thing. Yes, there was an egg. Notice the singular article there. An. They don't just sit around for months until you use them. If you had one egg. That egg was gone when you ovulated and you had your last period, Angela. You were so excited to tell us that you were bleeding and had your period. This is puberty 101. Tote this, tote that. Both of them need to tote their ass to a computer or their phone or Google or a library, something. Who cares what your OBGYN has to say? You don't even need to talk to her. We all know you are not the right person to be giving Michael a baby because you can't. So maybe you set Michael free. Maybe you're not the right person for each other. Both of them need to cut their losses. And instead of saying, we've spent 3 years with each other, why throw those years away? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you have nothing in common. You make each other miserable. I mean, can you guys imagine, even if Angela allowed Michael to bring another woman in as a second wife or a surrogate or a whatever the hell they are going to have the second wife be, it would be a disaster and that poor woman would be treated so shitty. But why are we even talking about this? Hey, Angela, move into Africa. It would never happen. Okay, Sinjin and Tanya. I want you guys to close your eyes. Think back several months to when Tanya was drunk in Costa Rica. Remember, her boobs were hanging down under her friends' wore bras. It was such a great time. Such a great time, in fact, that she wanted to be able to go out to all the bars without Sinjin calling her all the time, keeping tabs on her. You know, because she's a grown-ass woman. She can take care of herself. Yeah. How about them apples, Tanya? How about you just let Sinjin tear it up in South Africa because he hasn't been home in years. His brother just nearly escaped death, and he wants to have a good time. All right? You met when he was a bartender. You knew what he was like before you got married. You can't be bitching and complaining that you want to change him now. But here we are, the two of them, flying to South Africa. Notice, by the way, Tanya's foot has magically cured itself, and she can not only walk on it, she can balance on one foot and make some hot tea and drink it ever so slowly before they get to the airport. You know, I cannot with her. Your husband is excited to go back home, as Tanya would be as well. You mean to tell me you can't get a cup of coffee at the airport or in the lobby of the hotel? You're fine, Tanya. You will have a minimum of 3 hours at the airport before you got to board your flight. You'll survive. And this is coming from me. I'm addicted to coffee. I have to have coffee every morning. But you can pull yourself together between the hotel and the airport. But finally, they make it there. She probably does or doesn't get her fucking tea. She's probably pissed about having to pee so often. That would totally be a Tanya. But finally, they get aboard the flight. I breathe a sigh of relief because, you know, Tanya's in international skies. She's off her hands. But then, you know it's coming. Sinjin takes off his shoes and socks. The fucking gall. It takes someone to do that. It is not about you feeling comfortable and laid back. It's about your fellow passengers on that flight not having to make you more comfortable. It's not about you. No one wants to smell your disgusting foot smell all around them. Is it painful to wear socks, slippers? Do you have a medical condition? Is there any protective barrier at all that you could put on between your bare skin and the rest of us? Ugh, I hate both of them. I mean, really, they're both dead to me at this point. I don't care about the conversation between Sinjin and his mom and his family being sad and he feels trapped because his mom raised that shoeless monster, so now she's got to deal with him. All right, well, that does it for this week's episode. Oh, I really do need a drink after that. Thank you so much for listening. Please head to iTunes, leave a 5-star review. It really helps me out. Check out all the links in the show notes for Patreon and Total Request Podcast. And until next week, you guys, take care of yourselves, wear a damn mask, and stay salty.
Emoji moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Amit, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.